Love comes to us wearing many masks, speaking many tongues, sometimes strange tongues, unfamiliar, uncomfortable. Love speaks to us across time and space, filling our hearts and our imaginations, and because it contains multitudes, it's refracted like light in a prism, and we see the beauty of its individual colors, all its aspects, everything that makes love, love. It's fitting then that on this night in which we are given a new commandment and given an example to live by and to love by, that we attend to love's multitudes, these three sacred days, and let it teach us as it manifests itself in the agony and the glory of the passion. For I have set you an example that you should also do as I have done to you. Very truly, I tell you, servants are not greater than their master, nor are messengers greater than the one who sent them. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them. Love is here in this story of such grand humility, such powerful weakness. Love is here in this paradox, this moment when divinity becomes dirty, when the truly human one becomes next to naked so he can wash the filth off the feet of his followers. They were his friends, yes, but they were also his students, his disciples, his servants. This was not the way. This still is not the way, even with his example ringing in our ears. The world turned then, as it does now, on the whim of the powerful. But Jesus is saying something else, showing something else. He is showing us the better way. And that better way, it's not totally captured in the word servant. It's more fully captured by the word slave. Slave. It's a word that's so harsh and it contains degrees of horror. Here in America, it evokes our greatest shame, our greatest awfulness. And maybe that's why the translators of the New Revised Standard Version chose to soften the Greek word doulos every time it shows up in the Bible, presenting it as servant instead of slave. But slave it is, always has been, and always will be, no matter how much we want to soften it. And more than that, the word isn't meant to evoke someone who became a slave through force or capture. It's a word used for somebody born into slavery, someone whose very life is inextricably linked with slavery, with being at the bottom, with the people who served, who slaved, who cleaned up the manure and the rotting garbage, who tended to the most unsavory parts of the world that the elite wanted to hide away. Born into a system of oppression, born into the crib and cradle of Roman occupation, born into a family whose trade was whatever manual labor could bring in enough denarii just to make it one more day in the tiny room they called home. I mean, forget saving for anything big, anything opulent. Forget saving for anything resembling the upper class that those day laborers served. Those who were bondsmen, the slaves born into slavery, certainly suffered a harsher life than the average day laborer of the lower class. But the system itself that supported the rich and the powerful and the elite, all of that depended on the labor of the lower class, servant, bondsman, carpenter, slave. And here the gospel tonight has Jesus fully identified with the slaves, fully identified with those born into systems of oppression that they could barely hope to escape, though that sliver of hope quite often went unfulfilled. Jesus, the mingling of flesh and divinity, Jesus, the Son of God, Jesus, the fullness of God in flesh, this one tonight is seen as a slave, is known as a slave. And perhaps this is the night we finally see Jesus for who he most fully is, the slave of those who are themselves enslaved by evil, by sin, by oppression and injustice. Jesus is a God who sought not to be a master or a slaver, but to be one in chains, one in bondage, one who is caught in and tossed about by the tidal wave of the world's hate and evil. I mean, isn't that what betrayal is? Being tossed about when you least expected it by someone you trusted the most, being twisted into forms unrecognizable, having your relationship fractured, which in turn fractures your own sense of self. Love incarnate, love made real, our friend Jesus submitted himself to his betrayer, to Judas. He became enslaved to all that motivated him. Look, it was certainly more than greed, if we're honest, that the gospel writer would have us believe otherwise. We know that Judas felt something deep within because he took his own life in an attempt to balance the cosmic scale. And I find myself, every time we come around this time of year, wishing that he had only waited a few days, because he would have been in that second upper room, and he would have been restored with all his brothers alongside Thomas. Because you know as well as I do, Jesus would have embraced Judas then, just as he did when he disrobed, when he took Judas's craggly feet into his hands. And he stared deeply into Judas's eyes and his soul. And he offered him an unvarnished, unceasing, unfathomable love. Love called Jesus to be enslaved by the betrayal of Judas, and yet he shared his body anyway. He stripped naked as possible without scandalizing anyone in that room. He went all the way down to the bottom of what he could. He disrobed in the presence of the one he knew would soon invite such torment into their community, onto and into his very body. He knew all of this, and yet he still shared his body with Judas and washed the dirt from his unfaithful feet. To love even Judas, to submit his body to him, his life, his destiny. To do this is to submit to one of the most existentially deep pains, the pain of betrayal. Chains were placed on Jesus even before the guards and the chief priests arrived in the garden with their torches burning with fury. But he did this nevertheless, placing the chains of betrayal upon his own body, fastening the links one by one as he tended to the broken and hurting body of Judas first, and then offered him his very own. This is our Lord and our God. This is love made real, made tangible. On the night of the Last Supper, love was made slave to his friends and to the world's violence. He climbed upon the altar of hatred, of fear, of power-hungry people who were threatened by the power of a love supreme, a love that threatened only to liberate them. But they could not see it. Can you see it? This Maundy Thursday evening, can you see your liberator at hand? One found in chains as well, but one who frees us ever still? My excellent friends, as this is no ordinary service, ending with the typical shouts of triumph and resplendent tunes from the organ, we will at some point take a turn. We will descend further into the horror of these days. We don't leave here tonight with the typical powerful dismissal, sending us out to do the work of Jesus in the world. That's for Easter. Tonight, Our service ends with no voices, only the sounds of feet shuffling and bodies being carried by a haunting melody as we strip the altar and allow ourselves to be disquieted and discomforted by the sights and sounds of this inglorious moment in the life of Jesus when he is stripped bare, when he is diminished, and the Roman jackals surround him, making claim on his robe, on his heart, on him. Let this love seep in deeply into your heart. Let it expand your consciousness. Let it change you. After his betrayal, when all of his friends whose feet he had washed had left him alone like a dying animal, he spent the night at the house of Caiaphas. And after his interrogation, they tossed him into a cistern in the ground like garbage, 30 feet into the earth. He was thrust, stripped naked, stripped of his privacy, stripped of his power. I spent 10 minutes in that very cistern years ago, singing songs of lament and betrayal. It was cold and it was lonely and it was harrowing, but still a song rang out from that place, ringing off the stone, ringing for all time and forever, ringing even now, friends, as we ponder the naked, stripped, bare, breaking body of Jesus, ringing forever as we remain haunted by his dangerous memory. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. I imagine him with a smile as he says this, even as he knows that he'll soon suffer. But he smiles because he knows that one day we will get it. One day we will. He knows that one day we will stop making slaves of one another. He knows that one day we will stop making enemies of one another. He knows that one day we'll stop making objects of one another. He knows this, and so he smiles.